The Tragedy of Hamlet by William Shakespeare. Act 2, Scene 2. A Room in the Castle. Enter King Claudius, Queen Gertrude, Rosencrantz, Guildenstern, and attendants.
Welcome, dear Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Moreover, that we much did long to see you, the need we have to use you did provoke our hasty sending. Something have you heard of Hamlet's transformation? So call it, sith nor the exterior nor the inward man resembles that it was. What it should be, more than his father's death, that thus hath put him so much from the understanding of himself, I cannot dream of. I entreat you both, that being of so young days brought up with him, and sith so neighbored to his youth and havior, that you vouchsafe your rest here in our court, some little time, so by your companies, to draw him on to pleasures, and to gather, so much as from occasion you may glean, whether aught to us unknown afflicts him thus, that opened lines within our remedy.
Good gentlemen, he hath much talked of you, and sure I am two men there are not living to whom he more adheres. If it will please you to show us so much gentry and good will, as to expend your time with us a while for the supply and profit of our hope, your visitation shall receive such thanks as fits a king's remembrance.
Both your majesties might, by the sovereign power you have of us, put your dread pleasures more into command than to entreaty.
But we both obey, and here give up ourselves in the full bent to lay our service freely at your feet to be commanded.
Thanks, Rosencrantz, and gentle Guildenstern.
Thanks, Guildenstern, and gentle Rosencrantz, and I beseech you instantly to visit my too much changed son. Go, some of you, and bring these gentlemen where Hamlet is.
Heavens make our presence and our practices pleasant and helpful to him.
Aye. Amen.
Rosencrantz, Guildenstern, and some of the attendants exit. Polonius enters.
The ambassadors from Norway, my good lord, are joyfully returned. Thou still hast been the father of good news.
Have I, my lord?
I assure my good liege, I hold my duty as I hold my soul, both to my God and to my gracious king. And I do think, or else this brain of mine hunts not the trail of policy so sure as it hath used to do, that I have found the very cause of Hamlet's lunacy.
Oh, speak of that.
That do I long to hear.
Give first admittance to the ambassadors. My news shall be the fruit to that great feast.
Thyself do grace to them and bring them in.
Polonius exits.
He tells me, my dear Gertrude, he hath found the head and source of all your son's distemper.
I doubt it is no other but the main, his father's death, and our o'er-hasty marriage.
Well, we shall sift him.
Re-enter Polonius with Voltemand and Cornelius.
Welcome, my good friends. Say, Voltemand, what from our brother Norway?
Most fair return of greetings and desires. Upon our first, he sent out to suppress his nephew's levies, which to him appeared to be a preparation against the Polak. But, better looked into, he truly found it was against your highness, whereat grieved, that so his sickness, age, and impotence was falsely borne in hand, sends out arrests on Fortinbras, which he, in brief, obeys, receives rebuke from Norway, and in fine makes vow before his uncle nevermore to give the assay of arms against your majesty. Whereon old Norway, overcome with joy, gives him 3,000 crowns in annual fee and his commission to employ those soldiers so levied as before against the Polak, with an entreaty herein further shown.
Here he gives a paper.
That it might please you to give quiet pass through your dominions for this enterprise on such regards of safety and allowance as therein are set down.
It likes us well. And at our more considered time we'll read, answer, and think upon this business. Meantime we thank you for your well-took labour. Go to your rest. At night we'll feast together. Most welcome home.
Voltemand and Cornelius exit. Polonius speaks.
This business is well ended, my liege and madam, to expostulate what majesty should be, what duty is, why day is day, night and night, and time is time, were nothing but to waste night, day, and time. Therefore, since brevity is the soul of wit, and tediousness the limbs and outward flourishes, I will be brief. Your noble son is mad. Mad call I it, for to define true madness, what is't but to be nothing else but mad? But let that go.
More matter with less art. Madam, I swear I use no art at all.
That he is mad, tis true, tis pity, and pity, tis true, a foolish figure. But farewell it, for I will use no aught. Mad let us grant him then, and now remains, that we may find out the cause of this effect, or rather say the cause of this defect. For this effect defective comes by cause. Thus it remains, and the remainder thus, perpend. I have a daughter, have while she is mine, who in her duty and obedience, mark, hath given me this. Now gather and surmise.
He reads.
To the celestial and my soul's idol, the most beautified Ophelia. That's an ill phrase, a vile phrase. Beautified is a vile phrase, but you shall hear. Thus,
he reads.
In her excellent white bosom, these and so forth.
Come this from Hamlet to her?
Good madam, stay a while. I will be faithful.
He reads.
Doubt thou the stars are fire, doubt that the sun doth move, doubt truth to be a liar, but never doubt I love, O dear Ophelia. I am ill at these numbers. I have not aught to reckon my groans, but that I love thee best, O most best, believe it. Adieu. Thine evermore most dear lady, whilst this machine is to him Hamlet. This in obedience hath my daughter shown me, and more above hath his solicitings, as they fell out by time, by means, and place. All given to my ear. But how hath she received his love? What do you think of me? As a man faithful and honourable. I would fain prove so, but what might you think, when I had seen this hot love on the wing, as I perceived it, I must tell you that, before my daughter told me, what might you, or my dear Majesty, your Queen here, think, if I'd played the desk or table book, or given my heart a winking mute and dumb, or looked upon this love with idle sight, what might you think? No, I went round to work, and my young mistress thus I did bespeak. Lord Hamlet is a prince out of thy star, this must not be. And then I precepts gave her, that she should lock herself from his resort, admit no messengers, receive no tokens. Which done, she took the fruits of my advice, and he repulsed, a short tale to make, fell into a sadness, then into a fast, thence to a watch, thence into a weakness, thence to a lightness, and, by this declension, into the madness wherein now he raves, and all we mourn for.
Do you think 'tis this?
It may be, very likely. Hath there been such a time, I'd fain know that, that I have positively said 'tis so when it proved otherwise?
Not that I know.
Polonius, pointing to his head and shoulder,
take this from this, if this be otherwise. If circumstances lead me, I will find where truth is hid, though it were hid indeed within the center.
How may we try it further?
You know, sometimes he walks 4 hours together here in the lobby.
So he does indeed.
At such a time I'll loose my daughter to him. Be you and I behind an arras, then. Mark the encounter. If he love her not, and be not from his reason fallen thereon, let me be no assistant for a state, but keep a farm and carters.
We will try it.
But look where sadly the poor wretch comes reading.
Away, I do beseech you both away. I'll board him presently.
King Claudius, Queen Gertrude, and their attendants exit. Hamlet enters, reading.
Oh, give me leave. How does my good lord Hamlet?
Well, God of mercy.
Do you know me, my lord?
Excellent, well, you are a fishmonger.
Not I, my lord.
Then I would you were so honest a man.
Honest, my lord?
Aye, sir, to be honest, as this world goes, is to be one man picked out of 10,000.
That's very true, my lord. For if the sun breeds maggots in a dead dog, being a god-kissing carrion, have you a daughter?
I have, my lord.
Let her not walk in the sun. Conception is a blessing, but not as your daughter may conceive. Friend, look to it.
Polonius, speaking aside.
How say you by that? Still harping on my daughter, yet he knew me not at first. He said I was a fishmonger. He is far gone, and truly in my youth I suffered much extremity for love. Very near this. I'll speak to him again.
What do you read, my lord?
Words, words, words.
What is the matter, my lord?
Between who?
I mean, the matter that you read, my lord.
Slander, sir, for the satirical rogue says here that old men have grey beards. that their faces are wrinkled, their eyes purging thick amber and plum-tree gum, and that they have a plentiful lack of wit, together with most weak hams, all which, sir, though I most powerfully and potently believe, yet I hold it not honestly to have it thus set down. For yourself, sir, should be as old as I am, if, like a crab, you could go backward.
Polonius, speaking aside. Though this be madness, yet there is method in it.
Will you walk out of the air, my lord?
Into my grave?
Indeed, that is out of the air.
Speaking aside. How pregnant sometimes his replies are. A happiness that often madness hits on, which reason and sanity could not so prosperously be delivered of. I will leave him, and suddenly contrive the means of meeting between him and my daughter.
My honourable lord, I will most humbly take my leave of you.
You cannot, sir, take from me anything that I will more willingly part with all except my life, except my life, except my life.
Farewell you, my lord.
These tedious old fools.
Enter Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
You go to seek the Lord Hamlet. There he is.
God save you, sir.
Polonius exits.
My honoured lord, my most dear lord, my excellent good friends, how dost thou, Guildenstern?
Ah, Rosencrantz, good lads, how do ye both?
As the indifferent children of the earth. Happy in that we are not over-happy, on fortune's cap we are not the very button,
nor the soles of her shoe.
Neither, my lord. Then you live above her waist or in the middle of her favours?
Faith, her privates we.
In the secret parts of fortune, no. Most true, she is a strumpet.
What's the news?
None, my lord, but that the world's grown honest.
Then is doomsday near, but your news is not true.
Let me question more in particular. What have you, my good friends, deserved at the hands of fortune that she sends you to prison hither?
Prison, my lord?
Denmark's a prison.
Then is the world one?
A goodly one, in which there are many confines, wards, and dungeons, Denmark being one of the worst.
We think not so, my lord.
Why, then, 'tis none to you, for there is nothing either good or bad but thinking makes it so. To me, it is a prison.
Why, then, your ambition makes it one. 'Tis too narrow for your mind.
Oh, God, I could be bounded in a nutshell and count myself a king of infinite space, were it not that I have bad dreams.
Which dreams indeed are ambition, for the very substance of the ambitious is merely the shadow of a dream.
A dream itself is but a shadow.
Truly, and I hold ambition of so airy and light a quality that it is but a shadow's shadow.
Then are our beggars' bodies and our monarchs and outstretched heroes the beggars' shadows.
Shall we to the court? For, by my fay, I cannot reason.
We'll wait upon you.
No such matter. I will not sort you with the rest of my servants, for, to speak to you like an honest man, I am most dreadfully attendant. But, in the beaten way of friendship, what makes you at Elsinore?
To visit you, my lord. No other occasion.
Beggar that I am even poor in thanks. But I thank you, and sure, dear friends, my thanks are too dear a halfpenny.
Were you not sent for? Is it your own inclining? Is it a free visitation? Come, deal justly with me. Come, come, nay, speak.
What should we say, my lord?
Why, anything but to the purpose. You were sent for, and there is a kind of confession in your looks which your modesties have not graft enough to colour. I know the good king and queen have sent for you.
To what end, my lord?
That you must teach me. But let me conjure you, by the rights of our fellowship, by the consonancy of our youth, by the obligation of our ever-preserved love, and by what more dear a better proposer could charge you with all, be even and direct with me, whether you are sent for or no.
Rosencrantz speaks aside to Guildenstern.
What say you?
Nay, then, I have an eye of you. If you love me, hold not off.
My lord, we were sent for.
I will tell you why. So shall my anticipation prevent your discovery and your secrecy to the king and queen moult no feather. I have, of late, but wherefore I know not, lost all my mirth. forgone all custom of exercises, and indeed it goes so heavily with my disposition that this goodly frame, the earth, seems to me a sterile promontory, this most excellent canopy, the air, look you, this brave overhanging firmament, this majestical roof fretted with golden fire, why, it appears no other thing to me than a foul and pestilent congregation of vapours. What a piece of work is a man! How noble in reason, how infinite in faculty! In form and moving, how express and admirable! In action, how like an angel! In apprehension, how like a god! The beauty of the world, the paragon of animals! And yet to me, what is this quintessence of dust? Man delights not me, no, nor woman neither, though by your smiling you seem to say so. My lord, there was no such stuff in my thoughts. Why did you laugh, then, when I said man delights not me? To think, my lord, if you delight not in man, what Lenten entertainment the players shall receive from you. We coated them on the way, and hither are they coming to offer you service. He that plays the king shall be welcome. His majesty shall have tribute of me. The adventurous knight shall use his foil and target. The lover shall not sigh gratis. The humorous man shall end his part in peace. The clown shall make those laugh whose lungs are tickled, or the sair, and the lady shall say her mind freely, or the blank verse shall halt fort. What players are they? Even those you were wont to take delight in, the tragedians of the city. How chance it they travel. Their residence, both in reputation and profit, was better both ways. I think their inhibition comes by the means of the late innovation. Do they hold the same estimation they did when I was in the city? Are they so followed? No, indeed, are they not? How comes it? Do they grow rusty? Nay, their endeavour keeps in the wonted pace. But there is, sir, an area of children, little Iases, that cry out on the top of question and are most tyrannically clapped for it. These are now the fashion, and so berattle the common stages, so they call them, that many wearing rapiers are afraid of goose quills and dare scarce come thither. What are they, children? Who maintains them? How are they escorted? Will they pursue the quality no longer than they can sing? Will they not say afterwards, if they should grow themselves to common players, as it is most like if their means are no better, their writers do them wrong, to make them exclaim against their own succession? Faith, there has been much to do on both sides, and the nation holds it no sin to tire them to controversy. There was for a while no money bid for argument, unless the poet and the player went to cuffs in the question. Is it possible? Oh, there has been much throwing about of brains. Do the boys carry it away? Aye, that they do, my lord. Hercules and his load, too. It is not very strange, for mine uncle is king of Denmark, and those that would make mouths at him while my father lived give 20, 40, 50, 100 ducats apiece for his picture in little. S'blood, there is something in this more than natural, if philosophy could find it out. A flourish of trumpets is heard from within. There are the players. Gentlemen, you are welcome to Elsinore. Your hands come, then. The appurtenance of welcome is fashion and ceremony. Let me comply with you in this garb, lest my extent to the players, which I tell you must show fairly outward, should more appear like entertainment than yours. You are welcome, but my uncle, father, and aunt, mother are deceived. In what, my dear lord? I am but mad north-northwest. When the wind is southerly, I know a hawk from a handsaw. Enter Polonius. Well be with you, gentlemen. Hark you, Guildenstern, and you too, at each ear a hearer, that great baby you see there is not yet out of his swaddling clouds. Happily, he's the second time come to them, for they say an old man is twice a child. I will prophesy he comes to tell me of the players, mark it. You say right, sir, or Monday morning, 'twas so indeed. My lord, I have news to tell you. My lord, I have news to tell you. When Roscius was an actor in Rome, the actors are come hither, my lord. Buzz, buzz. Upon mine honour. Then came each actor on his ass. The best actors in the world, either for tragedy, comedy, history, pastoral, pastoral, comical, historical pastoral, tragical, historical, tragical, comical, historical pastoral, scene individual or poem unlimited. Seneca cannot be too heavy nor Plautus too light, for the law of writ and the liberty, these are the only men. O Jephthah, judge of Israel, what a treasure hadst thou?
What a treasure had he, my lord?
Why, one fair daughter and no more, the which he loved passing well.
Polonius speaks aside.
Still on my daughter. Am I not in the right, O Jephthah?
If you call me Jephthah, my lord, I have a daughter that I love passing well.
Nay, that follows not.
What follows then, my lord?
Why, as by lot God wot, and then you know it came to pass, as most like it was, the first row of the pious chanson will show you more, for look where my abridgment comes.
Enter 4 or 5 players.
You are welcome, masters, welcome all. I am glad to see thee well. Welcome, good friends. O, my old friend, thy face is valanced since I saw thee last. Comest thou to beard me in Denmark? What, my young lady and mistress? By our lady, your ladyship is nearer to heaven than when I saw you last by the altitude of a Chopin. Pray God your voice like a piece of uncurrent gold be not cracked within the ring. Masters, you are all welcome. We'll e'en, taught like French falconers, fly at anything we see. We'll have a speech straight. Come, give us a taste of your quality. Come, a passionate speech.
What speech, my lord?
I heard thee speak me a speech once, but it was never acted. Or if it was, not above once, for the play, I remember, pleased not the million. 'Twas caviare to the general, but it was, as I received it, and others whose judgment in such matters cried in the top of mine, an excellent play, well digested in the scenes, set down with as much modesty as cunning. I remember one said there were no salads in the lines to make the matter savoury, nor no matter in the phrase that might indite the author of affectation, but called it an honest method, as wholesome as sweet, and by very much more handsome than fine. One speech in it I chiefly loved. 'Twas Aeneas' tale to Dido, and thereabout of it especially, where he speaks of Priam's slaughter. If it live in your memory, begin at this line. Oh, let me see. Let me see. Ah, the rugged Pyrrhus, like the Hyrcanian beast. It is not so. It begins with Pyrrhus. The rugged Pyrrhus, he whose sable arms, black as his purpose, did the knight resemble when he lay couched in the ominous horse, hath now this dread and black complexion, smeared with heraldry more dismal. Head to foot, now is he total gulls, horridly tricked with blood of fathers, mothers, daughters, sons, baked and impasted with the parching streets that lend a tyrannous and damned light to their lord's murder, roasted in wrath and fire, and thus all sighs with coagulate gore, with eyes like carbuncles, the hellish Pyrrhus, old grandsire Priam, seeks. So proceed you.
For God, my lord, well spoken, with good accent and good discretion.
Anon, he finds him striking too short at Greeks. His antique sword, rebellious to his arm, lies where it falls, repugnant to command. Unequal matched, Pyrrhus at Priam drives, enraged strikes wide, but with the whiff and wind of his fell sword the unnerved father falls, then senseless Ilium, seeming to fell this blow with flaming top, stoops to his base, and with a hideous crash takes prisoner Pyrrhus' ear, for lo, his sword, which was declining on the milky head of reverend Priam, seemed in the air to stick, so as a painted tyrant Pyrrhus stood, and like a neutral to his will and matter did nothing. But as we often see against some storm of silence in the heavens, the rack stands still, the bold winds speechless, and the orb below as hush as death, anon the dreadful thunder doth rend the region. So after Pyrrhus' pause, aroused vengeance sets him newer work. And never did the Cyclops' hammers fall on Mars' armour forged for proof he turned with less remorse than Pyrrhus' bleeding sword now falls on Priam. Out, out, thou strumpet! Fortune, all you gods, in general synod take away her power, break all the spokes and fellies from her wheel, and bowl the round knave down the hill of heaven, as low as to the fiends.
This is too strong.
A chowl to the barbers with your beard, prithee, say on. He is for a jig or tail of bawdry, or he sleeps. Say on. Come to Hecuba. But who, oh, who had seen the marbled queen?
The marbled queen?
That's good. Marbled queen is good. Run barefoot up and down, threatening the flames with blossom loom, a clout upon that head where late the diadem stood, and for a robe about her lank and all o'er-teemed loins, a blanket in the alarm of fear caught up. Who this had seen with tongue in venom steeped, gainst fortune's state would treason have pronounced. But if the gods themselves did see her then when she saw Pyrrhus make malicious sport, in mincing with his sword her husband's limbs, the instant burst of clamour that she made, unless things mortal move them not at all, would have made milch the burning eyes of heaven, and passion in the gods. Look, whether he has not turned his colour and has tears in his eyes. Pray you, no more. 'Tis well. I'll have they speak out the rest soon. Good, my lord. Will you see the players well bestowed? Do you hear? Let them be well used, for they are the abstract and brief chronicles of the time. After your death, you were better have a bad epitaph than their ill report while you live. My lord, I will use them according to their desert. God's bodikins, man. Much better. Use every man after his desert. And who could scape whipping? Use them after your own honour and dignity. The less they deserve, the more merit is in your bounty. Take them in. Come, sirs. Follow him, friends. We'll hear a play tomorrow. Exit Polonius, with all the players but the first. Dost thou hear me, old friend? Can you play the murder of Gonzago? Aye, my lord. We'll have tomorrow night. You could, for a need, study a speech of some dozen or 16 lines, which I would set down and insert in it, could you not? Aye, my lord. Very well, follow that lord, and look you mock him not. The first player exits. My good friends, I'll leave you till night. You are welcome to Elsinore. Good, my lord. Aye, so God be with ye. Exit Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Now I am alone. Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I! Is it not monstrous that this player here, but in a fiction, in a dream of passion, could force his soul so to his own conceit, that from her working all his visage wand, tears in his eyes, distraction in his aspect, a broken voice in his whole function, suiting with forms to his conceit? And all for nothing, for Hecuba. What's Hecuba to him, or he to Hecuba, that he should weep for her? What would he do had he the motive and the cure for passion that I have? He would drown the stage with tears and cleave the general ear with horrid speech, make mad the guilty and appall the free, confound the ignorant and amaze indeed the very faculties of eyes and ears. Yet I, a dull and muddy-mettled rascal, peak like John o'Dreams, unpregnant of my cause, and can say nothing. No, not for a king upon whose property and most dear life a damned defeat was made. Am I a coward? Who calls me villain, breaks my pate across, plucks off my beard, and blows it in my face? Tweaks me by the nose, gives me the lie of the throat, as deep as to the lungs. Who does me this? Ah! Swans, I should take it, for it cannot be, but I am a pigeon-livered and lack gall to make oppression bitter. Or ere this I should have fatted all the region kites with this slave's offal. Bloody, bawdy villain! Remorseless, treacherous, lecherous, kindless villain! Oh, vengeance! Why, what an ass am I! This is most brave, that I, the son of a dear father murdered, prompted to my revenge by heaven and hell, must like a whore unpack my heart with words, and fall a-cursing like a very drab a scullion. Fie upon it! Faugh! About my brain I have heard that guilty creatures sitting at a play have by the very cunning of the scene been struck so to the soul that presently they have proclaimed their malefactions. For murder, though it have no tongue, will speak with most miraculous organ. I'll have these players play something like the murder of my father before mine uncle. I'll observe his looks. I'll tend him to the quick. If he but blench, I know my course. The spirit that I have seen may be the devil, and the devil hath power to assume a pleasing shape, yea, and perhaps out of my weakness and my melancholy, as he is very potent with such spirits, abuses me to damn him. I'll have grounds more relative than this. The play's the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king." Hamlet exits. The end of Act Two of The Tragedy of Hamlet by William Shakespeare. Read by Rick Kistner for Litigo on the web at fcit.usf.edu.